Buy with Rob is your best choice when purchasing your new home in the Puget Sound area. Call 360-710-9425 today and get started on the best home buying experience you will ever have. Go to buywithrob.com today.
People got along just fine for thousands of years without AA, just like they got along for thousands of years without religion.
I like you and have no reason not to.
I like you and have no reason not to.
Hey, did you hear about that magic baby that was born in Bethlehem?
Hey, this is YD from the Hail Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
I want to emphasize from the outset that I believe that we have far more critical issues in the 1960 campaign. The spread of communist influence, until it now festers only 90 miles from the coast of Florida. The humiliating treatment of our president and vice president by those who no longer respect our power. The hungry children I saw in West Virginia. The old people who cannot pay their doctor's bills. The families forced to give up their farms. An America with too many slums, with too few schools, and too late to the moon and outer space. These are the real issues which should decide this campaign. And they are not religious issues. For war and hunger and ignorance and despair. No religious barrier.
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity. Religion, 2020 campaign. Yes, it's already here. Politics and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. That may be one of my favorite speeches of all time. And it's been weighing on my mind the last few days for reasons that are going to become clear here in just a moment. Apologize for not being live today, but it's the way it goes. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. The email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and your preferred non-denominational web search browser can take you to thedavebowmanshow.com or podcast99.org, where you can get the show live and on demand. Ego Biberi, Capulus, et Ali Viveri. I drink coffee that others might live. So it's been a crazy day already. Obviously, normally we do the show live 10 a.m. Pacific, but today that wasn't going to happen. I got a call late last night. I was very surprised by it. I got a call from my doctor's office last night. I didn't even know they were open on Sundays. They're not. But apparently, as part of their prep work for the new week, they were going over some stuff, and so I got a call from them last night that they wanted to meet with me today to go over some test results, which normally that's not a good thing, right? I mean, that's the kind of thing your doctor calls and says, I need to see you. It's the kind of thing that makes you nervous. In my case, it did not, because I knew generally what it was about, and it's this ongoing thing with my blood sugar, and we've been trying some new medications, and we've been trying some new techniques and things like that. And so I knew that he had wanted to see me this coming week, but he was going to call me and say, now's a good time. Now I'm light. You know, it wasn't going to be an appointment per se. It was just going to be a, hey, drop in and when I'm not busy and I'll see. And so I wasn't expecting it to be at 9:30 on Monday morning. I was expecting it to be in the late afternoon when things generally seem to calm down around their office. But at 9:30, I trundled down there, and because I'm obsessively early to everything. If you know me, you know that that is the one thing about me that people, it drives my wife nuts. It drives my mom nuts. I am obsessively early to everything. If it starts at 9:30, I am there no later than 9:15. And if I'm there at 9:16, I'm anxious and I'm grumpy and I'm angry and I'm, come on, we're going to be late kind of approach to the thing. It's just the way I am. It's I've always been this way. I hate being late to anything. In fact, if you invite me to something and I'm late, I guarantee you that it was on purpose. Unless something weird happened, you know, an accident on the way or, you know, power outage or something like that. But if there's no other circumstances and I'm late, I'm late on purpose. I forced myself to be late, to be fashionably late. Otherwise, if you're going to have a party and you don't want guests before 7, tell me 7:30, because otherwise I will be there at 6:30, 6:45. And it's just who I am. It's what I am. So anyway, I get there at 9:15, of course, for this 9:30 appointment, which is supposed to take maybe 5 minutes. And so I'm thinking, all right, I'm out of there by 9:45 at the latest. It's 2 miles home. I can be ready to go at 10 o'clock. It might be a couple of minutes late, but I can be ready to go. I can do it. That was my thought. And as the clock hit 9:30 and then 9:35 and then 9:45 and then 9:50 and then 9:55 when the nurse finally called me back and said, come on back. And so I went back and they put me in a room and 10 o'clock came and went and 10:10 came and went. I can't complain. I mean, I didn't really have an appointment per se. So, you know, it's just kind of at his convenience sort of thing. But at the same time, I was getting a little antsy. And so, needless to say, by the time I got out of there, it was, lunchtime. And I wasn't really all that anxious about rushing back here to launch the show live. So put out the little notice there. Show's not going to be live today. And here we are we're doing it as is if it were live, but it's not. Anyway, this is all part of my health issues that I've been talking about, the changes that have got to come. You may have noticed that the show has gone from an hour to a half hour. The primary reason for that is the only reason to do an hour show is so that anybody that's in the radio biz listening and understands how a 3-hour talk show is structured, they know I've got the chops for it. Well, I've proven that. I don't need to do that anymore. And a half hour gets me where I need to be quicker. An hour show really takes up a lot of your day. It really does. So a half hour show. And later on the podcasts, as I talked about, that gives me time to get the show done, get to the gym, get my medications in me, and do the things that I need to do. So that's why all this is happening. And today it knocked out the live show, and I apologize for that in advance. But at the same time, stuff happens. I mentioned that speech there by Kennedy. That speech was given September 5th, 1960. And to me, as someone who, I don't idolize John Kennedy. I recognize his flaws. I recognize his faults, his various idiosyncrasies, and I would never pretend to say that I agree with him on everything. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he was right on this and wrong on that. But as a general leader, as a president, I find him fascinating. He's probably the last president that I would have really been on board with. Now, I did support George Herbert Walker Bush. And again, it wasn't milquetoast support for him. I agreed with a lot of things he did, but at the same time, there was a lot of partisanship involved with that. There was partisanship in 1960, don't get me wrong. But that partisanship in 1960 was a little less vitriolic than it is today. Today, I swear to God, I watched a congressman on my local news this morning explain to me that this shutdown could end as soon as the president gives us something. And I was taken aback. What do you mean when the president gives you something? What is it you want that you think that if the president just caved on this, you would give it to him? Because he wants something and you don't want to give it to him. That's the whole point of all this. And I thought, these people, they don't even really know what they're doing. They really don't. The vitriol today is all based in what letter is after your name. If it's an R, anybody that's a D hates you. It doesn't matter. You could be Jesus Christ and they would hate you. And if you're a D, you could be Mahatma Gandhi and everybody with an R would hate you. It doesn't, there's no rhyme or reason to it anymore. There was a time when the vitriol, when the political hatred, when the sniping was a bit more nuanced and a tad bit more Well, discriminatory, I guess. You got to go back in our history. One of the guys that ran for president in our country in 1928 was a guy by the name of Al Smith. Now, Al Smith, from what I know of him and what I've read of him, and this was the 1928 election, Al Smith is the kind of guy I could have gotten behind. He was a man of the people. Yes, he was a Democrat, and yes, he was the governor of New York, but he was an earthy kind of guy. His primary platform in 1928 was that he openly supported the repeal of prohibition, while his Republican counterpart would not comment on it. Herbert Hoover the belief is that Hoover did support it, but he didn't want to say that because he didn't want to alienate a significant portion of his base who might otherwise not support him if he was anti-temperance, or if he was pro-temperance, anti-prohibition. It was a much different country back then. Think of it in terms of a presidential candidate, say in 2004-ish, coming out in favor of legalization of marijuana. It would be akin to that in our world. The thing about Al Smith is he was fighting an uphill battle. The economy was doing great, the roaring 20s. The Republicans had really become the party of the small man, the common person, the non-urban folks. So you had that going for him. And then the kicker for Al Smith, who, by the way, had the best, I'm serious, he had the best campaign slogan I have ever seen in my life. Remember, Al was for the repeal of prohibition, and his campaign slogan, one of them was, "Vote for Al Smith and make your wet dreams come true." That's 1928 campaign stuff, folks. It was, I don't care what, I don't care where you are. That's awesome. I mean, if Archer was here, he would say phrasing, and there you go. The biggest strike against Al Smith, however, and the bias against him was that he was Roman Catholic, and there was a significant discriminatory attitude in this country towards Roman Catholics. And perhaps the biggest factor in his defeat was religion. It was the fact that he was Roman Catholic and people just weren't going to vote for him. Some years later, John Kennedy would end up running for president of the United States. And as I said, it was the 12th of September that he delivered this speech at Rice. He delivered that speech that I played you just the introduction to. It's a fantastic speech. It's about 10 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it anywhere. John Kennedy was Roman Catholic, and he was running against Richard Nixon, who even in 1960 was seen as something of, well, Dave Barry would have said a weasel. There were a lot of people who didn't trust Nixon. They didn't like him. There was something about Dick Nixon that people just never could warm up to, even though he was a Republican and Republicans were going to support him. And so during the 1960 campaign, they began to really whisper about Kennedy's religion. How can a man swear on a Bible to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States if he's Roman Catholic? Because he's also bound, they said, to the Pope. And if the Pope says to do something that our Constitution doesn't, who's he going to follow? Is he going to follow the Pope or is he going to follow the Constitution? And John Kennedy had to take time out of the campaign in 1960. In September of 1960, he had to take time out, speak to a ministerial association, and actually outline his position on the separation of church and state. And he made it very clear that religious issues were not what this campaign was supposed to be about. He was deeply concerned about the spread of communism, deeply concerned about the poverty, the social aspects that were affecting the country of the United States, plus the foreign demand. I mean, he was really upset about the way the president was being treated overseas. He was upset about all of these things, but he had to take the time to talk about his religious beliefs and why his religious beliefs were not going to be an issue. In other words, he wasn't going to call up the Pope every time he had to make a decision and go, "Well, what do you think? What should I do?" And then automatically do whatever the Pope said he should do. The ridiculousness of all of this is, of course, Kennedy's private life was it wasn't publicized the way it would be today, but it wasn't unknown. The difference was people in those days saw that kind of behavior, those kinds of things, as germ warfare. They were all doing it, just like they're all doing it today. And the problem is, if I start talking about Kennedy's peccadilloes, then you're going to start, he's going to start talking about mine. And there was a discretion that doesn't exist today. I'm not excusing the behavior. What I'm saying is it was handled differently. It was seen as something that didn't affect the politics of things. Keep your private life in your bedroom, then nobody cares. I've said that today. I don't care who you sleep with. I really don't, until you tell me that I have to care, until you start passing laws that say I have to approve or I have to do this. Then I start to care. That was in 1960 when Kennedy gave that speech. And again, it's one of his most fascinating speeches to me. It's a speech that ought to be required listening for folks to before you're allowed to vote or before you're allowed to do anything. In the 2008 election, Mitt Romney was whispered about his Mormonism. Even on this show, I had a guest who made a comment about his opinion about the LDS religion and whether or not it was Christian and so forth and so on, which turned into a big hubbaloo about. And of course, my own experience with having grown up in Utah led to some issues with that. But even Mitt Romney was, he tried to downplay his religion. It wasn't until months after the election that he finally sat down with the Washington Post and actually started talking about his religion and his religious beliefs and his strong belief in family structures and those kinds of things. All of these were events that happened, events that took place, and they all left us with a somewhat distasteful feeling in our souls. I mean, it just left a bad taste in our mouths. It really did, because you have this situation where people who are running for office are being pilloried for religious beliefs, which should have nothing to do with it. In fact, the very people that are bringing it up, you know, it's the parable in the New Testament about throwing rocks at people or looking at other people's planks in their eyes and criticizing them. And what you invariably find, and I have yet to meet the police officer that hasn't told me this story about the speeders, you know, when they get a call, when the chief of police gets a call from a neighborhood about speeding in the neighborhood, and so they put a cop out there, and it always turns out to be the person who was calling about the speeders in the neighborhood. It's the same thing here. We have this mindset that religious leaders are supposed to be are perfect, and they're not, dude. They're just as screwed up as you are. Trust me on this. I've been one. I'm the son of one. I'm the grandson of one. I'm telling you, religious leaders are every bit as fucked up as you are. Every single bit. And the difference is they have the pressure of trying not to be that you don't have. You have an argument with your wife. You have an argument with your wife. Who cares? He has an argument with his wife. Well, what happens if the congregation finds out? What happens if my leadership finds out? What happens then? They got that added pressure on top of it. It's a mess, folks. I could tell you stories about my time in ministry and those sorts of things. I don't think I really want to, but people who know me well know many of them. There are times when you think to yourself, why am I doing this? Religious leaders are no less normal than you are. But somehow or another, we put them up there. And then we start judging other people, politicians particularly, or office seekers, by standards that can't possibly be met. And all this came about this week because you have Kamala Harris, the senator from California, who has announced that she will announce that she's running for president on Martin Luther King Day because she's a minority, and that seems to fit, I guess. I don't know. She's announced that she's going to announce for president in 2020. She went after a judge, an office holder, public trust holder under the Constitution of the United States, under which no religious tests are required, because he's a Catholic and because he opposes abortion and because he believes in family values. And his answer was very Kennedy-esque. Look, I separate the two. I don't allow my religious beliefs to influence that. I don't change laws. I don't misinterpret laws. I don't misimply things like that because of my religious beliefs. And neither does anybody else. But Kamala Harris went after them. And this was followed by the Gabbard, who is also a woman who is running for president of the United States in 2020. She's announced that she's running for president. You've never heard of her? Yeah, she's from Hawaii. So she's a congressperson from Hawaii, and she's announced that she's going to run for president of the United States. And so she immediately attacked Kamala Harris for her outrageousness of not being tolerant of other people's religion. And I kind of got in a conversation, not an argument, but a conversation with a friend of mine over the weekend about that, because I don't believe that Gabbard really believes that. I think she's just saying that because Kamala Harris attacked. And so now you already have two Democrat candidates for president in 2020 attacking each other in an attempt to, in an attempt to make it look like they care about an issue that they don't really care about. They really don't. But by attacking each other over it, they can make it look like, well, I care more about religion than you do. That'll get me votes that you won't get, and I'll get votes that you won't get, and so forth and so on. It's intriguing to watch, because now we have this situation where religion is being bandied about by people who you would really question their religious beliefs. I'm sure that they would tell you that they're Christians, but again, just like John Kennedy, if you were to go into their lives, when the rubber meets the road, what do they really believe? Is it their Christian beliefs or their political beliefs? Which way is heavier for them? Well, I guarantee you they make a lot more money from their political beliefs than they ever did from their religious beliefs. And at the end of the day, that's the direction they're going to go. That's the direction they're going to lean. That's who they are. And so it amuses me. It bemuses me when I see two candidates who, even not as religious leaders, have not exactly lived lives that would be, examples of religious pious living, argue about, religion. It's strange to me. I get really hyper about it. I really do, because religion is a big deal to me. It's been a big part of my life. I no longer have the faith that I had as a child. I was raised in a specific denomination of the Christian Church, a denomination that even when I was 13, I knew I had philosophical problems with. And eventually, as I said on numerous occasions, I had to find a religious belief. I had to find a faith that matched what I believed. And for me, that was Judaism. And so in 2008, I converted to Judaism. But I always wonder, if I ever ran for office, how much whisper would there be about that? Oh, he's a Jew. You know that he's a Jew. You know that he's influenced by the Jewish cabal that runs the banking industries and the entire, that sort of thing. When, of course, if you know me well, and I mean, it's not like I don't have 12 years worth of shows here for you to listen to. Anybody that knows me well knows that, as I've said on numerous occasions, my faith doesn't vote. My faith, it guides me in my day-to-day life, but it doesn't decide what I'm going to vote on. It might influence it if it came down to two equally qualified candidates or issues or whatever, who were completely equally qualified, completely equally in every shape, form, thing in my head, and one was Jewish and one wasn't. Yeah, I'd vote for the Jewish guy or gal. But what are the odds of that? What are the odds of coming up with that kind of tie? Are pretty low, any way you look at it. So the reality that my faith might influence my vote is pretty low in the broad scheme of things, particularly when you start looking at, how Jews vote normally. And as a block, everybody always asks me that. Why don't Republicans vote Jewish? Or why don't Jews vote Republican? Well, as I've explained on numerous occasions, it's because, you can look that one up. It's look on my page, Why Don't Jews Vote Republican, and you'll start to understand what I'm talking about. For me, it's a very personal thing. It's a very important thing. But like John Kennedy, it isn't the deciding thing. And when I see two potential presidential candidates, and that's what they are, folks, let's not kid ourselves, Gabbard and Harris are running for president of the United States. And their argument over whether or not this judge is too religious to be on the bench or not religious enough to be on the bench or whatever have nothing to do with that judge at all. It's all about sniping at each other and criticizing each other and making sure that each other takes a hit and makes themselves look better. It's very early in the campaign. I don't see Gabbard going anywhere. Gabbard's got some, from a Democrat viewpoint, Gabbard has some real baggage that's going to be problematic for her, particularly because somebody like Harris is going to attack it. And, you know, I mean, again, it's politics. Of course she's going to. Why wouldn't she? Harris has got some baggage, too. And you wonder when that's going to come up. Those of you from California know what I'm talking about. It's very early on in the campaign, but I was just bemused by this whole, you're too religious, you're attacking religion argument from two candidates that officially haven't really officially announced yet. They've both announced that they're going to announce, and we're off and running. And for the moment, nobody's paying attention. Well, nobody in that argument was paying attention to the actual issues that affect the country. All we're paying attention to is who's anti-religious and who's pro-religious. And like Al Smith, watching from all those years ago, going, amateurs. I got to get going. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show. Normally here every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific time, but always available via podcast and on demand at thedavebowmanshow.com. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.